What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, Hockey IQ podcast today, because I can't speak already this morning, we have Brian Gillum. Brian, super excited to have you on. How's Ontario this morning?
Oh, thanks, Greg. It's great to be here. Yeah, we finally made this happen. It's exciting for me as well. Looks like it's going to be a great day here in Ontario. I'm looking out my office window and I see the sun coming up on the houses across the street from me, so I can't really see it from the easterly direction, but looking off in the western direction, it looks like we're going to have a nice sunny day here in the Ottawa region, so should be good. And it's Friday, a sunny Friday to lead into the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Friday and fall, I'm a huge fan of fall activities. If anyone wants to go straight to my heart, just let's go apple picking or doing a corn maze or anything fall related. I'm a sucker for it. I'm not going to lie. I'm someone who takes his life fall by fall. You know, that's how I rate it. Like I got to die in winter or spring because the fall is the best. So I'm excited. Hockey season's right around the corner, which means we're getting into a lot of practices, a lot of player development. And with Eastern Ontario, you guys do some unbelievable content production. I love some of the YouTube series you have. I'm dying to know how you come across all of these wonderful people and how do you choose all these great topics and what are you guys talking about these days? Cause it's always been fantastic stuff.
Yeah, we're pretty happy with what we do here and I can't take all the credit. Like it would be remiss of me to sit on here and say, it's all me. It's not, I work with, I actually report to a gentleman by the name of Jeff Robert who heads up the development programs with Hockey Eastern Ontario. And Jeff drives a lot of that. And some of that stuff that you've seen in terms of content actually was his idea and his brainchild. And then I just supported him. But between the two of us and between, you know, people we know and networking, you know, like a lot of people in the hockey business and the hockey world, you know, there's a lot of tentacles that kind of spread out and you get talking to people and they know people. And we approach, you know, even when we started this at the beginning of the pandemic, which is really what drove the whole concept of us doing our online development content and our coach webinars and whatnot. You know, we even reached out to people we didn't know, you know, just people we knew of. Started obviously with resources in our own region that we knew and that we had worked with before. And we have a major junior team here on our doorstep, the Ottawa 67s. And they're managed by a gentleman by the name of James Boyd, who has just been absolutely a staunch supporter of our branch and our work and what we do. And he has traditionally brought his coaching staff into the fold, starting with Andre Tournier, who is now in Arizona. Dave Cameron now has come on board, and you know, Norm Milley and some of those staff members, they've been really, really helpful. The Ottawa Senators staff, Pierre Dorion has done stuff with Hockey Eastern Ontario. He's brought his coaches into the fold. So we've just been lucky to have, you know, those two resources right on our doorstep and led by two GMs that are big believers in what we do and what Hockey Canada does. So it hasn't been hard to get them on board. And then the series that I did just recently on the skill acquisition sort of series, that was kind of lucky. I'll be honest with you. That was kind of lucky. I've been a number of years now, probably 6 or 7 years, chasing this ecological dynamics content, reading, studying, following the research papers, following a lot of these people on various podcasts. And I've just been getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And I got to the point where I started to think about, wow, it'd be great if I could get some of these people on and do a little bit of a series podcast type approach where I could get them talking about this stuff, but in very grassroots kind of terminology, like bring it down to youth coaching level so that we kind of scrape through all the research and the academia and make it relatable to the majority of coaches that are out there. So people like Stu Armstrong and Rob Gray and Dr. Ed Collin, those are people that I've kind of been chasing for a number of years. And I thought, you know, there's no way they're going to come on and do a podcast with Brian Gillum. Like, who's Brian Gillum? They don't know me. I'm not a researcher. I'm not in their world kind of thing. But I said, you know what? I'm just going to roll the dice and see what they say. And I contacted the three of them, and in very quick order, they all were so willing to come on, and you know, they just really gave their all in that. And then the back half of that was, once I had them lined up, I thought, well, what I need now is to get some hockey people on that work in this area. And that was a little tougher to do. I really only knew two. I had followed Ted Soikkonen for a number of years, and I'd seen him do some presentation and seminar work. And I knew that that is kind of the way he operated, you know, with his player development in Russia and now in Switzerland. I knew he was very sort of ecologically oriented in his methodologies and approaches. So I thought, wow, if I could get Ted to come on, that'd be great to get him talk about hockey from that perspective. And Wade Russell, I had met, actually, we were both doing our Hockey Canada skills coach certification together. And I met Wade a little over a year ago in Calgary, and just accidentally, really by chance, just stumbled upon the fact that Wade had studied this at university, had done a master's degree sort of in the coaching field around these topics. And so I thought, I'm going to give him a call. And both of them said yes, you know, very openly and freely. And that's kind of where that came from. So it was a little bit lucky. I was thrilled to be able to have the opportunity to do it. It went really well, I thought. We've gotten good reviews. And they all came on, and I thought did a really good job of sort of cutting down through that, what I call the research academia talk, because it can get a little heavily laden with that kind of terminology, and sometimes it probably turns a lot of youth coaches away from digging deeper into it because it is a little hard to understand when you first start listening to some of the academics talk about that stuff. And I know even myself, I try to read research papers in that area, and even I kind of get part way. And once I get past the abstract or the introduction, I'm like, okay, I have to stop now. I kind of understand what they're saying, but I can't read anything else.
Yeah, you need the Corey McNabs of the world to help dumb it down a little bit. But I mean, you just name dropped a bunch of folks, and you even got Pat Malloy there in your backyard in
Oh, yeah.
Ottawa. So I gotta say, are they hiring you as their hype man? Is that where we're going with this?
No commissions, no commissions. I hype, you know what? I hype where I think the hype is due. And yeah, you know, you mentioned a guy like Pat Malloy, and Pat has been sensational for us in the branch. You know, here's a guy who makes his living working at, you know, the highest levels of the game, major, junior, professional NHLers, and he so willingly gives back to this branch. And gets involved in our program of excellence with the younger players. He's a clinic facilitator with us. Hockey Canada has a line of skills clinics called the Instructional Stream. And Pat delivers those for us quite willingly. He's been really, you know, he's been really good for our branch, a great resource to have.
Yeah, I like Pat. So I'm gonna shout out to Pat and Ted because they came on early when we barely had a podcast, just more of an idea. So they're awesome. But I'm curious to dive into the actual X and O's sorts and the concepts. Like we talk about cutting down the lingo a little bit. I remember when I was first working with business owners and we were talking about mergers and acquisitions, and we're talking about recapitalization. It's a whole new vocabulary. But then when you get down to it, it's really simple concepts. So in simple words for you know, what is like CLA, ecological dynamics, all of that kind of stuff that you've been hearing about recently, trying to read recently, and really bringing in great people like Wade Russell to talk about. And there's so many other great people. I definitely would implore people to check out the YouTube page. I think that the webinar series needs to add some of these latest people to the playlist. But I mean, the playlist itself is just littered with great content and great names. So, in your words, what would be some of these big words in simple English, and why are they important?
Well, I'm beginning to think even more and more that they're critical. Like, I've moved beyond important. I think our game, I think coaches in our game all need to start understanding what these concepts, approaches, frameworks, models, pedagogies, whatever you want to call it. Like, the term to me is secondary. I've started using them in my player development work with my skills company. I've used it as a coach on ice with teams. I've now seen the effect from players, feedback from parents on the benefits it brings, the enjoyment of practicing. It takes away the isolation, the rote memory of do it over and over and over. It just creates a different way. And that different way instills an enjoyment and a captivity in the players that we see when we use the methodologies. So, you ask about ecological dynamics, and kind of, for me, that's kind of where it starts. And again, I'm not in the field of academia or research around this. I don't deem myself to be an expert in it by any stretch of the imagination. But what I've come to learn is that it kind of starts top down from ecological dynamics, that concept. And then all those other things are sort of underneath that. They're little tentacles of that, or that's how I've looked at it. And really, in simple terms, the whole premise behind ecological dynamics, for me as a hockey coach, what I've come to learn is the environment we create around our team on the ice in practice, that practice environment is as important a learning and development tool as the drills we run, the instructions we give, and all of the things that go on inside of that. And if we create the right environments with the right elements and features and aspects to that environment, it can have a huge benefit on changing the behavior of our players. Now, when coaches kind of hear that, they start to think, oh, so what you're saying is that I don't need to coach, that if I just create the right practice environment, the right games, the right activities, then I don't need to talk. I don't need to do anything that, you hear the phrase, the game is the teacher. That's not what it really says. You still have to coach. You still have to give feedback. You still will provide instructions. You will still, and we'll talk about, manipulating constraints, and there's, again, there's that academic terminology of manipulating. Well, what do you mean manipulating? Is that just a fancy word for changing or controlling? But the whole ecological approach, the player development, pulls the environment you create into the picture. So we don't ignore the bigger environment and its elements. And then the minute we start talking about that environment, then you start talking about, is that environment a representation of the game? Are your activities representative? Do they represent? And I love, I've used this term. Stu Armstrong dropped this term when I did my podcast with him, he referred to it as a slice of the game. Do your environments, when you create practice, does that practice environment represent the game, elements of the game, slices of the game? Or is that environment just purely isolation, rote memory, go here, do this, stand here, pass here, shoot there? So you've taken away all of the thinking, decision-making, problem-solving. That environment now is stale. That's a very sanitary, stale environment. For me, the ecological approach to practicing says you need to create that environment that is representative of the game. And then let that ecology, which is just another fancy word for environment, let that environment be a valuable driver of the learning. So create environments that can drive the learning. And then as a coach, work inside that environment. And then that's where we then start looking at things like constraints-led approaches, fancy terms like non-linear pedagogy. Well, when you hear the word pedagogy, that's just a fancy word for teaching methodology, right? So a teaching or learning methodology that is non-linear, one that says, players don't learn skills A to B to C to D to E to F, which is that very linear, progressive, I got to teach them how to do A before I get to B. They got to know A and B before they get to C. Well, why can't we just go right to C? Or can we go right to C? And for me as a coach, what non-linear concepts kind of say is you can't, because that's the way people learn. People don't really learn in a pure linear fashion. People kind of learn all over the map. You can do small area games. You can do drills that have pressure in them. You can have drills that have decision-making in them. And those drills and games and activities are allowing that athlete to learn to skate, to pass, to shoot, to angle, protect the puck. They're learning a whole bunch of things. They're not just in isolation learning one thing before they move on to the next thing, which is the very linear kind of isolated mechanical technical approach. It's also somewhat the traditional approach that we see a lot of in our game. And that whole sort of ecological dynamics for me kind of says we can get away from that. We can get away from that traditional linear A, B, C, D, and we can get more into a build environments that look and feel like the elements of the game, put athletes inside of it so that they are learning multiple things at a time, which is very non-linear. And then while you're coaching, your method of coaching now, rather than standing at a whiteboard like you see on my back wall and drawing a picture that says, skate here, go there, start here, end here, do this, and then asking players, do exactly what you see on this picture. Now in your coaching, you create activities that have rules, boundaries, limits, aspects to them whereby all you do now is you put the athlete in that activity. You give them the setup of that activity. So, okay, you know, kids, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put four players inside the circle. You're going to have one puck. And the objective is for one team, you two in blue, to keep the puck away from the two that are in red. That's it. That's the game. That's the drill. That's the activity. And on opposite sides of the circle, you have two nets that have goalies in them. But you didn't say anything about the goalies. You didn't say anything about scoring goals. You just said you have to keep the puck away from the other team. And you let the activity start. And you let it progress. And you let the players exist inside that environment. And you let them find solutions. As they're finding solutions to solve problems they're encountering, they may never take a shot on net. They might go, hey, there's a goalie there. Why can't we shoot on net? And so they shoot on the net. They score a goal. As you watch these activities now, as the coach, you are looking at ways to ask questions instead of telling them, whoa, 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 hey, you're not shooting on the net. I want you to shoot on the net. You must shoot. You now start to ask questions of them, and you let them gain understanding by answering your questions, and your questions guide them into other areas of learning that, as the coach, you want them to go into, but you don't really want to drive them into it. You want them to discover it. You want them to explore and find it. And then from a constraints approach, you now might look at the game and go, okay, what I'm not seeing is passing. I gave them an objective that said the objective of the activity is to keep the puck away from the other two players. And what I'm noticing is that because these players are really good, what I'm noticing is that when one player gets the puck, he or she just keeps it. And they're not passing it to the other player. I'd like to see some passing. So now, as the coach, you put a constraint in there. You put a rule. Maybe you say, okay, the objective is to keep the puck away from the other pair. But when you have the puck, you need to share the puck. You can't just own it all on your own. I didn't really say make a pass. I just said you have to share it. I said you can't keep it all on your own. Maybe the player slides the puck back to the goalie who's standing in the net and says, here, you take the puck and give it back to me. Maybe he passes it to the other player. Maybe he puts it into open space and goes and gets it back. Like, these are very loose ideas, but the idea behind constraints is, for me, I don't always want to be telling my players, do, 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 do. I need to let my players explore and discover, just like they have to in the game. I'm on the bench. I'm not on the ice with them in a game. I can't tell them how to play the game when they're out there playing 5-on-5. They have to do it on their own. They have to discover and experiment, and they make mistakes. So I have to have that environment in my practice. And in order for me to get away from instructing and directing verbally, I look for ways to apply rules, remove rules, shrink the space, take a player out, add a player in, changing the dynamics of the activity. Make it feel different, make it look different. To me, that's what constraints in a simple way is. And here's the funny thing, Greg. Constraints coaching has existed in our game forever. In the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s, coaches were using constraints. The thing is, though, there's a difference between using constraints and a constraints-led approach. And now it gets really technical. Like, now even
Now we
I
start
have to
losing people. Yeah.
a whole 100%, right? Because coaches will say, well, okay, I understand constraints. I use those all the time. I play a small area game and I take two big padded dividers and I constrain the space down to one corner and I put a net backwards facing the corner. So I'm using constraints. Yes, you are. But the constraints-led approach goes a little bit beyond just having constraints in an activity. It extends into you manipulating them to drive the learning. So it's one thing to put a constraint in an activity. It's a different thing when you start manipulating it, twisting it, modifying it, moving that constraint around, and using them not just as a way to serve as a boundary, but also as a learning tool. And like you said, now it starts getting a little complicated, and then you start kind of coaches start going, okay, yeah, that's beyond me, right? But it's not. When I first started down this path, there was days when I would listen to Stu Armstrong's podcast or Rob Gray's podcast, and I would listen to what was being said, and I thought, God, I'm an academic of sorts. I used to be a school teacher. I went to university. I'm not a researcher, but there was days I listened to that stuff and I thought, wow, God, this is even beyond me. But I didn't give up on it. I got stubborn. I would come out of a podcast and I would Google terms. I would go and look for simpler understanding. I would read something. I'd listen to another podcast. Eventually, I got to a place where I now felt, okay, now I understand it in my terminology because I'm a simple terminology person as well. I always take things, and I hate this cliche, but you hear people say it all the time. I always take things and dumb it down. I dumb it down for myself. And because I work so much in coach development, it allows me then to take everything I learn and share it and pass it on to grassroots coaches real easy because I talk in grassroots terms. Like I don't talk about ecological dynamics. That's not a term that I use regularly. When I talk with coaches, what I'll say is you need to be able to create a practice environment. What you create on the ice, that environment, we need to look at how you're creating that environment and the activities you're putting in it to serve the learning of your players. Well, that's to me, that's ecological dynamics, but I'm not looking at a grassroots coach and saying, hey, you need to use ecological dynamics here as your approach, because they'll just go, huh? And they'll walk away. So to me, they're valuable. I don't see them used enough at all in our game. I haven't had the pleasure of being able to see them used in Europe sports, which where they seem to be very, very popular. Like all of the learning that I've had, the podcasting, the research papers I read, the books I've read, everything seems to be written by coming out of people who work and coach in Europe, soccer, rugby, field hockey, rugby sevens. These sports seem to be fully embraced in these approaches, models, frameworks. I don't see it as much here in North America. I don't see it in our coaching content. I think it'll get there. I really do. We still look at a lot of this as being new. It's not new. It's been around for years. I've read research papers on this that were written in the 80s. So it's been around for a very long time. It just hasn't seemed to taken hold in our game. And I don't know why. I'm trying to change that here in our region, but it's a slow change. Change doesn't come fast. Change never happens fast. Change is not easy. In my professional work at a local university here, we have rather elaborate processes that deal with change management to the point where change can be so difficult that you actually have to manage the change. Because a lot of people view change as something you do when something is broken. And, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But that's not what change is really about. Change is about improvement. And you could not be broken. You could be doing things okay. But there could be a better way. And I think that's where I am with these approaches, is that I'm now seeing them as a better way than the old linear traditional A, B, C, D, E. I'm now seeing results can happen effectively, and in some cases, much more effectively. If we get off the linear, we get more into this non-linear and think more about making practice represent the game, slices of the game, instead of skating around circles, skating around cones, unopposed, no pressure, easy peasy. Let's throw kids into drills that have pressure on day one. Like instead of skating around circles freely with a puck and then shooting at the net, skate around that circle with a puck with someone chasing you or someone trying to take it. And you're going to fail and you're going to succeed. And when you fail, it's a learning opportunity. And when you succeed, it's a learning opportunity because you've now figured out how to deal with pressure and solve a problem.
I think that's a great point. It's like we don't need to be in lines and go down the rink to learn skating. Like there's many different ways, and there's functional skating, and yeah, there's times and places for maybe some specialty skills training, but as a whole, we need to be putting these kids into places where they're seeing the cues, the reads, like their brains are super elastic. Like how can we get them thinking outside the box a little bit? And one thing that you mentioned that I really want to pull out is getting out of like the whiteboard drills. Like if you have to go to a whiteboard, I'm not sure that's a great drill, because now the kids are just worrying about doing the drill properly rather than the details and the habits within the drill that are actually the most important thing. Like when you describe a drill, you do not need to have a whiteboard. You should be able to describe what you're doing and then letting the kids explore. Or here's what we're going to do. It's so simple, but here's the details. And the focus becomes on the details and the habits. I think that is truly the valuable piece for coaches to understand when they're looking at actually teaching and putting kids in environments where they can learn best. And I call it like the whiteboard lists and the whistle list practices. Like you don't have a whiteboard, you don't have a whistle, because you're not the one doing the learning. You're allowing it to be all player driven. Like they have to look at each other to start an activity, or it's so continuous, you're going offense, defense out, or some kind of rotation like that. And then that allows you as the coach to actually use the skills of coaching, observation, explanation, demonstration, checking for understanding. Like the question asking is so valuable, and it's really what separates the good from the great, because the brain that does the thinking is the brain that does the learning, and you have to get in this reflective state to truly grow. And if you think about anyone in your growth, you're either asking yourself a question and answering it, or someone's asked you a question and you're like, oh, and then you make the connections yourself. And the same thing happens with the players, is they have to make the connections. I always tell people, like, some people will ask for advice and they'll take it and run with it, but most people, rather than being directed, you need to do this, and then that person goes and does that, it's actually the person who asks the question, are you ready for this next step? And then you're like asking yourself questions like, oh, am I? And then boom, 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 you fill in your own thing. I feel like that's what gets missed most, is like, how do we bridge the gap from where the player currently is, where they want to go, or what they want to do? And that it's all personal, and it's all asking good questions, getting in that reflective state where they're actually thinking. And when they're thinking in practice, they're getting this deeper understanding of the game. It's like reading a Hockey IQ newsletter. Like you're getting the detail, and then you're exploring it, whether it be within yourself or with your coaches, within your teammates, and really being able to see this beautiful picture that gets, painted out there on the ice. Like for me, I'm playing a game and I'm like, okay, I'm looking for defensive pivots, and that's what I'm going to take advantage of today. And I doubt many people think about watching defense's feet and seeing when they're pivoting, and that's the vulnerable piece. But if we get these kids thinking about these things early and asking questions, where we're not having to run a drill, run an activity, we're just creating the environment, and then actually coaching, we're actually observing. We're gonna have so much more color and depth and enjoyment as coaches ourselves, and pass that along and that passion to our players, which I think is super critical. So those are some elements that's really stuck out to me as you were talking there, and I think are just so valuable to bring up and bubble to the surface more often.
Yeah, your viewers, I shouldn't say your viewers, your listeners be listening to this podcast, but they probably won't realize that we're on Zoom looking at each other, and I have a very huge smile on my face as I'm listening to you go on your preamble. It took, I'm doing some reading now on empirical knowledge versus experiential knowledge. Which I, again, there's the academia kind of talk, right? Simply put, I talk about those two concepts from the perspective of empirical, and I know the empirical people will hear this and go, oh, that's completely wrong. And I realize it's wrong. But again, I simplify, empirical knowledge is what I read in a book. It's my senses, what I see, what I hear. I watch it on TV. I watch it on a pod, listen to it on a podcast. I read it from a book. It's empirical knowledge. It's knowledge. I've acquired knowledge. I've read a book. I've picked up some information and knowledge about something. As a hockey coach, I really don't learn it until I use it. So all of this stuff we've talked about, this constraints-led approach, this ecological dynamics, and all this, I was gaining the knowledge. I was listening, I was reading, I was hearing, I was watching. It wasn't until I started experiencing it and using it and failing with it and succeeding with it and twisting it and modifying it that I really started to learn it, and it stuck and held with me. And players are the same way, right? Players are the same way. One could argue, I draw a picture on a whiteboard. The players go out and do exactly what I drew on the whiteboard, skate up the ice, catch a pass over the blue line, at the net, shoot, go line up. Is that empirical or is that experiential? Like, that's where I am now with these models. Like, I'm looking at that now and I'm going, am I just asking them to read a book here? Because they're not thinking, they're not making decisions, they're not problem solving, they're not discovering, there's no questioning. I might not do that drill for another 2 weeks. So it's complete, there's no retrieval, practice after practice after practice. Is that just empirical for these kids? Like, is it in one ear and out the other? And I believe the answer is yes, that that type of drilling, sporadically used, is really not driving the learning. What really drives the learning is the environment where they have to think, they have to fail, they have to ask questions of themselves. Like you said, they have to reflect. The next day you come back to practice, because you're creating your environments this way, there are all these recurring elements or slices of the game that are now in every single practice. So every day you're on the ice with your kids practicing, there's puck protection, there's angling, there's passing, there's decision making, there's communication, there's problem solving, there's gap control, there's pressure. Passing through pressure, shooting off of pressure, evading pressure, escaping. All of these recurring elements of the game are in every single practice. I don't do puck protection drills on a Saturday and then at practice on Tuesday, don't do puck protection. I don't come back to puck protection till another 2 weeks. That gap is so large now that anything you may have done in puck protection on that Saturday, a week, 10 days later, it's gone. They're back to square one again. It's fresh. But what I've seen when I've combined stuff I've learned on how kids learn and the best way to bring learning into your practice, it lines up perfectly with all this ecological stuff I'm learning. I'm like, why don't they go together? It's like, like it's like mac and cheese. Like, they're perfect together. Every day, I'm creating an environment in practice where I've got these recurring game elements every single day. Every drill, every activity. Kids have to protect a puck. Kids have to use their body to protect a puck. They have to place the puck in a protected area. They're always under pressure. They have to look. They have to scan. They have to be deceptive. They have to evade. Like, I'm not running drills now on deception. My entire practice every day requires players to be deceptive. I might not be instructing it, but it's there. It's an element every day, like protecting a puck. And the way they learn these things is by them failing and losing a puck and questioning and reflecting, why did I lose that puck? Oh, I didn't have my body in the right place. Oh, that guy could reach out and poke check me Next time I'm going to shelter the puck a little bit better. They're learning puck protection almost inherently. And it happens over time. Again, I go back to a wonderful comment Stu Armstrong made when I had him on my episode. And I asked Stu specifically, I said, you'll get hockey coaches who will say, I have to teach them how to skate. I have to teach them how to pass now in order for them to get to here. Like I've got to do this. I've got to do it this year. And I said to Stu, what would you say to those coaches? And without hesitation, he looked at me and said, what's the rush? And I paused and I thought, like, that's a real simple answer, but that's an awful powerful statement. And I've thought about it more and more. And it's so true. What is the rush? I have 11-year-old kids at U12 hockey. Do I need to teach them a power play? Do I need to teach them a forecheck at 11 years old? What's the rush? Is
Oh
it to win
man,
games?
man, you got me
Is
going
it
here. You got me going here.
to win games, to win tournament? Like, they're 11 years old, 9-year-olds, 12-year-olds. Like, and then we get into the whole question of, well, when do we start teaching that stuff? And that's a tough question to answer. Like, that's a tough question to answer. Some people will say, well, team play systems, U14, you got to wait for them to be mentally attuned. You've got to wait for them to have enough individual skill and individual tactic and small group tactic. You got to progress them over their age years the same way you progress them within an age year. But I now come back to what's the rush? Like, hypothetically, I'll throw this out to your listeners and to you. I coach U12, U13, U14, U15. And in all of those years, I never once teach power play. And I'm just picking on power play. Never. I never, ever, ever teach my players how to run a power play. 1-3-1, box and one, overload, umbrella, whatever you want to talk about. I never do it. I may give them some video to watch. I may give them some stuff to read. But not once on the ice do I teach power play. What I do teach is skill development. I grow the individual. I teach them how to play in small areas of the ice. I teach them how to play tactically. So, one on one, two on twos, three on twos, two on threes, one on threes. I teach them all of those slices of the game. And I build that and I build it and I build it. Now they get to you, Greg, at U16. And they've never been taught power play. I'm going to say that in under a week, you can take those players who are now extremely skilled, extremely smart, know how to solve problems. They understand the principles of the game. They know how to create space, fill space, lanes, pass through. Like, they've got all the understanding they need to run an effective power play. How long is it going to take for you to teach those players to run an effective power play? If I, over you, 12, 13, 14, and 15, gave them all the tools they need, you could probably do it in one practice. So, do we need to teach it at U12, at U13? And again, I say I'm picking on power play, but you could say this the same of any team system. Do we need to be teaching team systems at young ages of hockey players? And if you say yes, then I think as a coach, we need to then ask the next question, why? What is the purpose of teaching 11, 12, 13-year-olds how to play in systematic groups of five, moving as a well-organized flock of geese, if you will? Very coordinated, very, ooh, wow, They've got great systems. I think we need to ask those questions of ourselves. And if we say, yes, we have to be teaching it, then not only do we have to ask why, but we also have to ask ourselves and other coaches, what are you forsaking? What are you not teaching and developing in order to devote time to teaching young children how to play the game systematically instead of teaching them how to play it skillfully?
Oh, opportunity costs. Let's go. We got some great economics talks this morning, which is right up my alley. I'll talk finance and economics all day, every day. Given that's what I actually do. Too fun. And I think you're spot on. One piece I pulled out, and I call it like the mimic stage. Like before those kids like truly are able to learn and retain concepts, and you're right, it's probably somewhere between 12 to 14 when that kind of phases in. With every person where you go from just mimicking what you're seeing to like truly understand and being able to run with a concept. And should we be teaching systems and things like that or activities that require following a line early when kids are just mimicking and they don't understand much, like versus when they're older, when we can add more concepts, more abstract learning. To that. That was one that really stuck out to me as you're talking through this is the difference between maybe some of the younger ages versus the older ages and how do we shape our designs and our practices and the environment for those. And it's almost two different learners. It's kind of like a youth learning versus adult learning. The adult learning, they've got so much more that they can pull from personal experiences, et cetera. Versus the youth that, this is a lot of the stuff coming at them for the first time. And how do you approach that education in the first place? And how do you use that maybe greater brain elasticity versus when you're older, where you're kind of like, ah, I really like this. I've been running with it. Now you need something that is way better to truly make that jump between doing what you going from what you've been doing to something new as a kid. Just as long as it's just a little bit better, they'll make that jump. And continue to make that jump. And it's an interesting dynamic between the different types of learnings as our brain develops and allows us the ability to wrap onto concepts easier rather than just monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, and it's, I use the word principles of the game, which are not the easiest things to teach in kids. Like as a coach, when we do coaching, in Hockey Canada coaching clinics, we talk about the principles of the game, offensive and defensive principles. And there's always coaches in the room who will ask me, well, how do I teach that? Like how do I teach support? How do I teach pressure? How do I teach transition? How, creating space, finding space. Like, how do we teach those principles of the game, those concepts of the game? And they're, I tell coaches all the time, I really don't have drills to teach transition. It's something that I put into all of my drills. A lot of the drills, games, activities I use require players to support one another on the puck, away from the puck. When we start talking about the principles of the game, concepts of the game, that probably, more mental side or than the physical side of the game, those elements do become easier to teach, in my opinion. When the practice environment, here I go, right back to square one, when our practice environments represent slices of the game, those principles come out. So you're not teaching them directly. But again, let's go back to pick on power play, right? I'll tell coaches I work with all the time, there's nothing special about a power play. A power play really is 5-on-5 hockey, but the other team only has four. Really, like I dumb power play right down to it's 5-on-5 hockey, but the other team has four players. So if we go out and play good, effective, 5-on-5 hockey, and they only have four players, we should be able to experience some level of success. I think somewhere along the line in hockey, and maybe at the pro level, this is required. I'm not going to say this is wrong or we shouldn't be doing it, but I think sometimes we overinflate systems in minor hockey when they are not as valuable as we really make them out to be. And again, I like to pick on the power play because it's the one that you see in minor hockey and penalty kill, where we tend to believe there's a real mechanical pattern. Players have got to be in a shape on a penalty kill, on a power play. You've got to be in that 1-3-1. You've got to be in this formation, or else it will not work. I'm not convinced. I'm really not convinced. I'll say to many teams I coach, if we put five really smart, skilled hockey players on the ice and they only have four, I think we'll be okay. But really, when you look at a power play, because we have five and they have four, a successful power play now really becomes all about movement of the puck, movement of the players, creating space, using space, creating seams, using seams, shot volume, quick release, accurate passing. Like, all of those things are valuable 5-on-5 as well. Like, those are just principal concepts of the game. We're in their zone with the puck. Extend the possession. Don't throw a puck away blindly. Hang on to it, extend it, be productive. That's a principle of the game. That's a fundamental concept of offensive hockey. 5-on-5, 5-on-3, 5-on-4. Doesn't change. Using space, creating space, filling space, rotating, moving players in and out of space. That's 5-on-5 hockey. That's what cycling is. On a power play, you have more space to use. So why stand around? Move. Move. Use it. Exploit it. Attack it quickly. So if you create practice environments where you're using drills and small area games and activities that represent slices of the game, then you're going to pull all those things in to practice. Every day in practice, your players are developing their ability to move the puck, move bodies, create space, fill space, rotate, support, communicate. Like, all of that is every day, every day, every activity, every drill. Now you're going to get all of that transferring to the game. 5-on-5, 5-on-4, 5-on-3. To me, you might be creating an argument that if I practice that way, I don't need to spend time teaching robotic systems. My players will be smart, skilled, problem-solving decision makers who understand and utilize the principles and concepts of the game. What more do we need to do? As a coach, I think you've now done your job and you've prepared those players to have long-term success in this sport, whether it's get drafted, play professionally, go to college, or end up playing adult recreational hockey for the rest of their life. To me, it's a win-win. That approach and that mentality to coaching youth hockey, to me, is a win-win situation.
Love this. Brian, I think that's a great way to learn to end this learning time and environment that we've created today. Like, no matter what you do, you're gonna take all of this and have a great time. Like, that is, I think, the essence of what we're talking about. Hockey is such a great lifelong journey, playing, teaching, coaching, etc. It's the best. Absolutely the best. So thank you so much for coming on. What are some maybe some resources people can come and find you in Hockey Eastern Ontario?
Well, our we just launched our new website, actually, a fabulous website upgrade and sharp looking product now. It's hockeyeasternontario.ca. sense.ca. Our YouTube channel, if you just go to YouTube and search for Hockey Eastern Ontario, you'll find our YouTube channel and you'll find our complete coach development webinar series and the skill acquisition series that we did. Anybody that wants to reach out to me, I'm bgillum@rogers.com and on Twitter, good gracious, I think I'm Brian Gillum 66 on Twitter at Brian Gillum 66. But if you follow Greg, I believe me and Greg follow each other. So you can follow, hit Greg's Twitter account up and you'll find me there somewhere. So, and I'm always more than willing to talk hockey with anybody, reach out. So if, you know, if you, if anybody is listening and they want to chase me down to talk more about any of this stuff me and Greg have talked about, always more than happy.
Beautiful. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful day there in Ontario. Great time of the year.
You too, Greg. Thanks. Pleasure being here. Really enjoyed it.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch your Buttes here next week for a brand new episode.